You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Steven, DJ Steven, doing a nice job. Our next guest, George Reister. Football, faith, fatherhood, food. You can watch George Reister on The Unafraid Show on YouTube. You can find him on social media, Twitter, wherever you get your social media. George Reister, not difficult to find. Former Duck tight end, former NFL player, man of the world, George Reister, joining us now. Let's start with the important stuff. You said faith, family, fatherhood, food. What's your favorite food? What's your go-to?
Oh man, it depends on the day, John. I'm a cravings person. So like one day, like for instance today, I'm having a craving for ramen. So I'm going to one of my favorite ramen spots today. Yesterday was Italian food. Who knows what it'll be tomorrow?
Let's go back to your playing career before we get into the stuff today and your conversation with Dan Lanning and others. But you get drafted in 2003. You're turning pro. It's a different world back then. Where was your mindset as the Jaguars pick you in the fourth round of that 2003 NFL draft?
Oh, my heart was hurt, John. My heart was hurt. And honestly, I look back on it and I'm frustrated that I didn't enjoy the moment. I was too busy worried about that I was the fourth round pick, number 104, and I had a second round grade, and the Cowboys and another team called me in the second round, oh, we're going to draft you this round, and then it didn't happen. I had to wait until the second day of the draft. I was one of the first picks of the second day, and my heart was so broken that I couldn't enjoy the moment, and my family was so happy. They were so excited. They didn't care. They were just happy that I was getting a chance to live my dream. So I tell all the young players that I talk to, like, don't let this one moment define something that's actually great, that you're now part of a fraternity that so few people are a part of.
I love that perspective now. And, you know, when you're that age, though, it's hard to think beyond yourself and hard to see the big picture,
yep.
Isn't it?
And the fact that your draft status has no determination on whether you play in the NFL, how good you are, how much money you make. Like, yes, it may determine some of your initial opportunities, but at the end of the day, your work ethic and your talent will either keep you in the league or not.
George Reister with us. How long did it take you to figure out? Like, you get there, you get to training camp, and you look around. Everybody was the best player on their high school team as you're looking, yep, around the locker room and you're looking around training camp, that first training camp. How long did it take you to figure that out?
It was real quick. It's almost like when players they go to college out of high school and they think their stars are going to save them, and they realize real quick, they're like, hold up, this backup dude is giving me fits right now. I got to get it together. And then all the excitement that the coaches treat you with when you're going on your pre-draft visits, mm-hmm, and, you know, or your recruiting visits. Oh my God, we love you, just fawning on you. And then the day you show up, they're like, hey, what up? Hop in the back of the line. And then you're like, wait, what? I thought I was the golden child. It was like, yeah. So was everybody else. Thanks for coming.
I love that. George, how would you have done with the NIL equation? Would you have ended up at like three or four different colleges, or how do you think that would have gone?
See, because of my parents, I doubt it, because I tried to leave Oregon my first year because I redshirted. My granddad died. I just wasn't real happy with the situation. And I called my dad every single week and my mom, and I said, I want to come home. And every single day they said, no, George, you cannot come home. Wait till next week. And then after about 3 or 4 weeks of that, said, Dad, you said 3 or 4 weeks, like, wait till next week. And all right, this is it. I'm coming home. He said, well, I don't know where you're going to live at. I was like, wait, what do you mean? And he was like, listen, son, you can come back here to visit after you graduate college if you need some, you know, if you need some place to stay, something like that, I got you. But this is not your your home anymore. So if you come home, you better figure out somewhere to live. And so I had parents that were about the grind and sticking it through. And I teach my son, Nat, who's a freshman in college now. And I do think that there's a place and a time for moving, and it's appropriate for a lot of kids. But I do think that usually you need to at least stick it out a year or two where you're at.
Yeah, I agree that too, with that too. And I think there's something to be learned by staying with something, even if it's not going your way. And I do yep. think we're in this culture or this era where the minute a kid doesn't hear what they want to hear, they bolt.
Yeah, and sometimes the answer is not to run to an easier or situation or a situation with that appears to have less friction, because somebody else there is good and they're working out. And sometimes you just got to face that adversity and say, all right, I just got to get better. Or if you're on a roster that is, you know, like some of the elite teams in college football, they're pretty stacked at certain positions. Sometimes you just have to get better and want it more than the other person wants it.
You sat down with Jed Fish recently on the Unafraid yes. show. You sat in his office with him? Like, what's it like to have Jed in his comfort zone?
Oh, man, it was cool because, first of all, that was actually my first time at UW, believe it or not. Because when I was at Oregon, my freshman year, we played, Washington played in Eugene, and then the next 2 years, they may have been off the schedule because of the weird Pac-12 thing, and then they played down in Eugene again, and then I left my junior year to go to the NFL, so I never played up there. I never played there, and I never played at Stanford. And those two, but to go up there and see Mott Lake and, like, inside the stadium and the where the coaches' offices are, it's a really good setup. And Jed was just really open and honest, and I got a chance to ask him about some of the criticisms of him about, like, oh, as soon as the Florida job opens up, are you leaving? And this gave him an opportunity to address those things, and he was like, people have, there's been this narrative that I've bounced all over the place. He was like, I've been a head coach for 5 years, and this is my second stop. And all the other years, I was an assistant. And when you're an assistant, you're at the mercy of the head coach. He was like, I've been a part of 3 head coaches that got fired, so of course I had to bounce. And at Arizona, he didn't say this specifically, but he kind of hinted at it when I asked him about the finances, because people don't always think about the head coach's responsibility when it comes to his assistant coaches. So like, John, let's say that you were one of my assistant coaches, and I'm making $3-4 million a year, you're making $300,000-400,000 a year. And you know that somebody else offers me $8-9 million, and that's gonna put you in the $900 million range for your salary, and I've been loyal to you and sticking with you. John, how are you going to look at me if I don't even entertain the possibility of taking this job?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to. You'd have to consider doing what was best for yourself. You have to also know that, like, Jed's, I wonder if he has a desire to stay in one place because of that narrative on him and maybe stick it out longer with this yeah. tenure. Or did you get that sense from him that he is committed to being yeah. at Washington?
Yes. Yes, I do. This is actually not just Jed, but what I've gotten from more and more head coaches and even some of my friends who I played with and against who are assistant coaches, they're more committed to, like, they're seeing the value to sticking it out in one place, because you build up equity there. You have sway with the administration, and there's a lot more opportunities available to you than just hopping from place to place. You look at the guy that Jed just replaced in Kalen DeBoer. They were offering him, what, damn near $10 million a year. He had gone to the playoff and won the Pac-12. He had beaten Oregon three times in a row. He was the man around there, and now he's fighting for his life in Alabama right now. He might rather be in Seattle getting a chance to watch his daughter play softball all the time in a place where he's king right now.
We're talking to George Reister. George, you got a chance to talk to Dan Lanning. You have a bunch of other coaches coming down the pipeline. Dabo Swinney, Dan Mullen, Kyle Whittingham, Mario Cristobal, Kenny Dillingham's going to be on your show. All these coaches. Why do you want to go in this direction, and what are you after talking to these coaches?
Well, I enjoy the conversations because you get a chance to ask them things that the fans really want to know and the fans really want to see, because a lot of times you only hear a coach in sound bites, and then you hear the coach speak. Oh yeah, we got to win the day. We got to do what's right. No, I want to know how you built the program. What are the tenets of your success? What are your thoughts about the college football calendar? And that's actually something that we're going to take at the end, that all of the thing that all of these coaches said and put it on one video about what they said about recruiting and the calendar and what they said about this upcoming season, and just make it very easy for fans to be able to understand what is going on in the coaches' brains, what's going on in their programs. And also, you know, because I'll be part of some college football coverage on digital and on TV this fall. So it gives me an insight to be able to, you know, to be able to speak about the programs and the coaches in just much more of an educated way. And it's also allowed me to forge relationships with these coaches, where I'm able to text them. They text back, and if I have a question about something going on in their program, they will answer it. But at the same time, I've been able to build up some trust. That way they know that there are certain things that I'm not going to break news about, that it's just, okay, I understand how to address it in the media, because they will tell me the truth, knowing that I won't burn them on the back end.
George, let me ask you, like, in talking to Jed Fish at Washington, does Oregon come up in that conversation? And then in talking to Dan Lanning, does Washington come up in that conversation? Or do you feel like maybe Washington is thinking more about Oregon than Oregon's thinking about Washington?
So there is in Jed Fish's office, he has a sign that says "Beat Oregon to today," or "What did you do to beat Oregon today?" So that's definitely on his mind. And I definitely think when I asked Dan Lanning who was the biggest rival at this point now, is it Ohio State or is it Washington? He was like, bro, it's Washington. There's nothing to talk about. So I definitely think that for both programs, it is a big deal. But I would say at this point in time, it feels like Washington is targeting Oregon more than Oregon is targeting Washington, because Oregon, it feels like, has their target set on Ohio State right now, while Washington is targeting Oregon.
I am curious to think what you made of Oregon, the end of Oregon's season. How much do you think the way it ended against Ohio State is stuck in Dan Lanning's craw and motivates him going into next season?
Oh, anytime you get taken beat behind the woodshed, it always sticks in you a little bit harder. But I definitely do. I want fans, John, to like to really look at the totality of seasons, because it's really easy, and I know that you have a good perspective on this, John, is that this ring culture thing, right? That if you didn't win the championship that year, then you suck. Then you didn't do what you were supposed to do. When in reality, and this is something that I talked to Dabo Swinney about, is that, and when that interview comes out, that one's going to be powerful. It was crazy. It almost had me in tears. But like, just the graduating of his players and the growth of the young men, and putting a good team out on the field every year that your fans can be proud of, regardless of whether you win the national championship or not. Of course, everybody wants to win, but you can't win every year. But if you can have sustained success, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins a year, how as a fan can you really be upset about that? And we need to reset what we're actually deeming as successful, because we got fans that want to fire coaches that are winning 10, 11 games a year. And they're like, oh, that ain't good enough. We don't have a guy who can win the big one. When in reality, it takes coaches a long time to break through. Like in history, aside from people who have inherited teams that were, you know, like when Coker inherited Miami or something like that, you don't really have coaches that win sooner than 6 years, and usually it takes them way longer.
George Reister with us, former NFL tight end, former Oregon Duck. You can find him on social media now. He is doing this great show where he's interviewing a number of high-profile coaches on the Unafraid show. This next season, you know, Dan Lanning and Oregon have shown progress, right? From his first year to his second year to his third year. It's steady progress. What's the next step for Oregon in your mind?
Oh, it's a national championship, but I definitely think that even bigger than that, I think that you have reached a point of your program of stability when you have minimal transfer portal players in, right? Like that the less transfer portal players that you have to take in, that means that you're doing a better job of recruiting, evaluating, and trusting your young players and standing on your recruiting. So I think that that's the next evolution for Oregon, is to really see what these young 4- and 5-star kids that you have amassed in these great recruiting classes, what they're able to do. And then really, like, stay out of the transfer portal besides, you know, like, you want to be taken under 4 players a year, I think, in terms of guys that you're expecting to be big-time contributors. Of course, like, if you're taking freshmen and stuff like that from other places, that's different. But I'm saying, like, guys that you're expecting to come in and be starters, if you're taking 4 or less a year, I think you're in a really good spot every year.
George Reister with us. George, I really appreciate everything you're doing. You know, this next season, it's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens. I love that you're talking to coaches. Have you talked to Mario Cristobal yet, or is that coming down the pipeline?
He's coming down the pipeline. I'm actually excited because he so we actually had a date scheduled, but it was the day before they were getting ready to start spring ball. And so we moved it until when their spring ball is finished. So I'm actually excited about that, because I got all sorts of questions for him, because when you're looking at what he's been able to do at Miami and him leaving Oregon and everything else, I think that there is some questions about him that people really don't know. And being on the inside and getting a chance to know him as a former player, it is, and my first tight end coach, his name was Alfredo Roberts, and he was on the team with Mario at Miami when they were in college. And all of those Miami guys, you see Michael Irvin and all them doing, when they played there during that 80s, 90s, early 2000 era, there's like an obsessive love for it. It is almost like a cult-like for them. So when he left Oregon, it was almost like he didn't have a choice. Like it was like his greatest love calling him, and they needed him, and he had to go. It is literally like a cult with those with those guys. Whatever they went through was something special.
I love it, George Reister. Appreciate you. Keep up the fight, and we'll get you on as the season approaches.
Yes, sir. Thank you, John. I appreciate your time, and of course, I always love the Bald-Faced Truth.
There he is, George Reister, going off into the sunset. He's got all these great interviews with coaches. Check him out on social media. All right, tomorrow, March Madness begins. But before the madness, we got to have a conversation. Stick around for it.